Hello, this is World Business Report from the BBC World Service, where we bring you the latest in money, marketing, manufacturing, and yes, much, much more. Please review us, rate us, share us wherever you can. BBC podcasts are supported by advertising.
Five women vying against each other.
Mountaineers who put everything on the line to follow their dreams.
To be the first to climb all 8,000 meter peaks.
The 14 highest mountains.
Amazing sports stories from the BBC World Service presents Chasing Mountains.
Every step was an achievement.
Listen now by searching for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Hello and welcome to World Business Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Roger Hearing, and on this edition, the US Federal Reserve holds interest rates where they are, blaming uncertain prospects in the economy and stubborn inflation. We look at how the high rates are putting the brakes on people wanting to move house.
I'm hoping someone walks, knocks on my door and says, hey, we're willing to pay you this, and then the interest rates won't matter because they're going to pay me as much as I want.
And we've got an exclusive interview with Pakistan's finance minister on how he plans to raise more taxes in the week the country got the first part of another bailout from the International Monetary Fund.
We have run out of taxing the same for more. Can we do it for another year? Can we do it for another 2 years? Yes, we can. But if we don't start by bringing under-taxed and untaxed sectors into the fold, we'll never get there. So our hand has been forced.
And hear more from him later in the program. Remember, you can email us at any time on world.business@bbc.co.uk. Now, decisions on interest rates by the central bank of the world's largest economy really matter. And in its latest judgment, holding rates exactly where they are, the US Federal Reserve has delivered a verdict on progress in fighting inflation. That verdict is that there's been a lack of further progress in bringing the rate of price rises down towards the target of 2%. The economic outlook is uncertain, and the committee remains highly attentive to inflation risks, read the Fed's statement. Well, Fed Chair Jerome Powell explained the decision.
We've stated that we do not expect that it will be appropriate to reduce the target range for the federal funds rate until we have gained greater confidence that inflation is moving sustainably toward 2%. So far this year, the data have not given us that greater confidence. In particular, and as I noted earlier, readings on inflation have come in above expectations. It is likely that gaining such greater confidence will take longer than previously expected. We are prepared to maintain the current target range for the federal funds rate for as long as appropriate.
Jerome Powell. Well, initially, Wall Street seemed pretty pleased by all this. All the main indexes rose. But what Jerome Powell said in the news conference after the announcement is what really matters, what his words and tone suggest about when rates might actually be cut. Well, I asked our New York business correspondent, Michelle Fleury, what we'd learned.
Well, let's just sort of lay out the backdrop to this meeting, which was we started in January and most people were anticipating several interest rate cuts from America's central bank this year. And then as the months have passed, we've got more data on the economy. A couple of things have come up. One is that inflation has proved more stubborn and that for the last 2 months, instead of kind of continuing the trend of moving down, we saw prices beginning to creep up again. And that was led by things like increases in petrol prices and housing costs. The second thing we've seen is data last week from the government showing that growth, the pace of growth in the US is slowing. And so that puts the Federal Reserve in a tricky position. And people have entered into this meeting wondering, well, are they going to put off lowering interest rates altogether, or are we still going to get them, but just with a bit of a delay? Or, shock horror, could we even be looking at a potential increase? And so that was the line of questioning that Fed Chair Jay Powell kind of faced today in his press conference. But going back to the statement, what they initially did was they said, we're leaving rates unchanged. And the key statement that they made in their policy kind of document that they released with the announcement is they said they had seen a lack of progress towards their goal of 2% inflation in explaining why we can expect rates to stay higher for longer.
Yeah, I mean, I'm getting the impression that the traders are expecting overwhelmingly a cut, but maybe as late as November, is that the kind of thinking?
Well, and then that gets you into, would it be September, which would be right before the election? And there was questions sort of about timing. And Fed Chair Jay Powell was at pains to point out, you know, we just focus on the data, nothing else. We will not be looking at any political calendars. And said, you know, for him, this was his fourth election where he's been at the Federal Reserve. And if you go back to the deliberations leading up to them, at no point has there ever been a suggestion that they weren't anything but independent. And this comes at a time when you sort of started to have some comments from the Trump camp questioning the independence of the Fed and whether or not that could be changed in the future.
And of course, the other factor, apart from the inflation and growth, is employment. And we had some interesting data on that suggesting that the growth of new jobs is much less than it has been. I mean, that, I suppose, would suggest that the economy is perhaps not as moving forward as fast, which could suggest perhaps slightly earlier rate cuts than might otherwise have been the case.
Well, and you know, the bright spot of the US economy at a time when the Fed over the last couple of years had been raising rates so aggressively, you know, what's kind of held everything together has been the surprisingly strong labour market. And we're going to get the latest government figures at the end of this week. And that is going to be increasingly in the spotlight. And that became clear from this press conference that in the past, we've seen the central bank focused primarily on inflation, but they have a dual mandate, and that is to also worry about the labour market. And I think that is now coming into balance. So Fed Chair Jerome Powell said there is a possibility that if you unexpectedly saw the labour market deteriorate, then that might lead to a rate cut. But again, in the past, it has been very much about inflation improving and not about changes in the labour market that have kind of surrounded any discussion of rate cuts.
I suppose when we get to see the minutes of what was going on in the background of this, or this meeting of the committee, because it is a committee, could we get a sense then, perhaps, of where the hawks and the doves are in terms of where this is leading?
I think market watchers absolutely are going to be poring over that those minutes for any indication. I mean, what was fascinating was, you know, as I said, the very idea that you could potentially consider a rate hike was a question that was put to Fed Chair Jerome Powell. He thought that was highly unlikely. So he seemed to kind of put that question to rest. But if there's any sign of dissent in those minutes or sense of sort of differing opinions coming out when we start to hear the voting committee members speaking in the kind of weeks and months ahead, I think that's something that's going to have the power to move markets sharply.
Michelle Fleury there. Well, let's hear about markets. Joining me is Susan Schmidt, Head of Public Equity at the State of Wisconsin Investment Board. Susan, welcome to the programme. I did say earlier that the markets responded pretty positively to start with, but towards the close, it was a bit more, changeable, wasn't it?
It was a bit more changeable, but overall, the markets were essentially flat on the day. So we had our major indices, the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ, down both a third of a percent. So not a big move. And I think that investors are really absorbing this. As commented on earlier, the worst case scenario would have been that Chairman Powell suggested that an interest rate increase might be under consideration. And he definitely took that off the table. I think that's where investors' fear was. And he's basically substantiated the prior messages of, we'll hold the course, we still think there's risk, inflation isn't as low as we want, so we're just going to stay here for a bit longer. Investors are absorbing that pretty well overall.
Yeah, and I mean, as I was saying there to Michelle, once they get a look at the minutes, they might have an interesting view about who was in, who was out, and where this is going. And briefly, do you think, you know, rate cuts November, is that still the guess?
I think investors are looking at this saying, all right, it's got to be closer to the end of the year, certainly after the summer months are over. And remember, there's a big change in perception here. We came into the year thinking there'd be as many as six cuts. Obviously, that's not what's going to happen.
All right, Susan, thanks. Stay with us, if you will. A few more questions she'll ask you in a bit. But let's now turn to one of the markets that really matters in terms of interest rates, and that, of course, is the housing market. It feels a lot of the pain and indeed the relief when it comes to rates and decides whether people can afford to borrow enough to move home, after all. The US housing market's been a bit of a quiet patch since the rates were raised originally. One man feeling the pinch is Bob Wood. Now, he's a professor of finance and economics at the University of South Alabama, and he's been trying to move house since last year. We spoke about that to him, in fact, last September on this program. I caught up with him just after today's Fed announcement.
We are one of the fortunate ones that we really don't have to sell. You know, I'm working and my wife's retired. So we're just waiting to watch rates go down. And today's announcement was positive. Of course, they've been positive before. And originally, they were going to start these rate reductions back in early 2024. And now it looks like November to start. So hopefully they can get things better under management.
Well, we think November. Of course, he's not promising anything. And we've sort of been spooked about this before, because the markets generally thought there were going to be cuts coming, well, perhaps not this month, but maybe next or the one after. And that really doesn't look like it's going to happen. So are you still confident?
I try to be confident, but this bit of inflation is a little bit different than normal. Of course, food costs and fuel costs are driving it, but there are a couple other things that are driving it that really haven't been there in the past. The first of those was the increase in low-skilled jobs, and those wages have gone up significantly in a lot of fast food places and other low-skilled places, and we've nearly never seen that as an input into inflation. Also, people are still spending money like like it's going to go on forever. They're buying furniture and luxury goods. And typically in high inflation environments, you don't see that kind of purchasing.
So are you feeling frustrated at the moment? I mean, your plans are still on hold, aren't they?
They are. And so I am fortunate the number of houses selling is about the same as last year. And my neighbor that lives across the street actually sold his house last month for an all-cash offer. So I'm hoping someone knocks on my door and says, hey, we're willing to pay you this. And then the interest rates won't matter because they're going to pay me as much as I want.
That would be nice, wouldn't it? But Bob, have you got your eyes set on somewhere else at the moment? Have you lined up somewhere you'd like to buy when it becomes possible?
Well, we currently live on the Gulf Coast in Mobile, and I my wife would really like to come back to the middle south, Tennessee, North Carolina, somewhere in that area. And so we've been looking at different cities and, ruling out some cities and keeping others still as possibilities. So it's just dependent on when it occurs and how it occurs. But we don't have anything just set in stone right now. Fortunately, we like Mobile and we like the area. So the only problem with the house is it's more house than we need. And, every now and then when it needs cleaning, we say we need a smaller house.
Professor Bob Wood there and his house moving problems. Well, let's hear about the wider national picture of the housing market. Joining us, I'm pleased to say, is Lawrence Yun, chief economist at the National Association of Realtors in the US. Lawrence, thanks for being with us. What we heard there from Bob, it's clearly frustrating at the moment. Is that a very widespread picture? Is the housing market pretty slow right now?
Last year, existing home sales reached 30-year low levels. 30 years ago in America, there were 70 million fewer people. So one has to wonder, with so many population growth over the past 30 years, why is home sales struggling? And it is the exact reason the prior guest mentioned, that people are unwilling to list the property onto the market, historically low inventory level. And then you combine this with the Federal Reserve interest rate hikes that occurred in the past 2 years. So mortgage rate being at 20-year high, monthly payment to buy a home has essentially doubled from, say, 2019 to what it is today. So that is holding back the home sales activity.
And in the last, year or so, when we've been, hanging on what's the Fed going to do, that hasn't really changed then. People are still worried about rates enough that they're holding back.
One encouraging sign is that we are beginning to see increase in inventory because the builders have been ramping up production, and also homeowners have record high wealth, which is the reason why we are seeing more incidents of cash purchases, because people are saying, well, mortgage rates are high, but I actually have quite sizable housing wealth. Why don't I just purchase the next home all cash? So we are seeing more cash transaction, but if the mortgage rate was to decline, and we know that the Federal Reserve will be cutting interest rate at least through next year. Maybe there's some delay this year, but at least through next year. So we are hopeful that there will be some robust bounce back in home sales as we go into late this year and next year.
Yeah, and obviously it's nice for people who are already sitting on a house and got one. But what about first-time buyers? That must be where the pain really is.
Oh, yeah, that is frustrating because first-time home buyer affordability, it is essentially at historically low levels. And as I mentioned, doubling in the monthly payment. So because of higher prices, because of higher mortgage rate, what used to be, say, $1,000 per month to buy a typical first-time starter home, now it has become $2,000 per month, so very costly. But maybe we are seeing some overconstruction in the apartment sector, and the rents there is beginning to calm down, and maybe that will be the force that brings the overall consumer price inflation to that 2% line, which the Jerome Powell is looking at. And maybe the curse later this year.
Well, fingers crossed. I think certainly for first-time buyers, other buyers, and, of course, your own association. Lawrence Yun there. Thanks so much for being with us. Lawrence Yun of the National Association of Realtors in...
Up there, you have to be quick to make decisions because it's not a natural environment for survival.
Five incredible women.
Mountaineers who put everything on the line to follow their dreams.
Amazing sports stories from the BBC World Service tells their story in Chasing Mountains.
I risked my life many times.
To be the first to climb all 8,000 meter peaks.
I had to finish it, accomplish it.
Search for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
The United States. You're with World Business Report from the BBC World Service. Now let's turn our minds to Pakistan. It's a country with a history of financial problems. At the weekend, the country secured the final slice, $1 billion, of its latest $3 billion bailout program from the International Monetary Fund to try to stabilise its finances. The cash, though, once again, comes with conditions, rules that Pakistan must meet around raising taxes and spending less. Can it do that? Well, after more than 20 previous promises like this that haven't been fulfilled, it's been a question many even inside Pakistan have been asking, including the new finance minister, Mohammed Aurangzeb. He's been speaking exclusively to my colleague Will Bain here on World Business Report.
It's good to see that IMF board cleared the final tranche. It gives us the necessary credibility that we can, as a country, show the necessary discipline that we can follow. It allows us now to go into further discussions with IMF to go for a larger and a longer program.
Execution seems to be a key element of it, didn't it? And the IMF and their statement around this from the weekend said the need to continue policy of reform, including strict adherence to fiscal targets. It's always difficult, isn't it? Especially you being a newish government. People, when they run departments, understandably, they get into politics to try and spend money and change people's lives and that kind of thing. It's going to have to be quite a lot of austerity, isn't there? Do you think everybody's on the same page in that terms of that?
You see, these things have to go hand in hand. You see, we have known the what and why for a very long time. Because if I tell you what are the key priorities around this reform agenda, the first is tax to GDP. Tax to GDP has been hovering below 10%. It's just not sustainable. We have to start taking it towards 13, 14%.
And what does that look like? Is that personal taxes? Is that taxes on companies? What is that?
Everything which is included, it will have two aspects to it. One, we have to fix the leakages which are there in the system. That's in the short term. And then we have to bring undertaxed, untaxed sectors within the net. We have to take our tax to GDP to a 15% range.
But tangibly, Minister, what does that look like? Is that persuasion? Is that enforcement? You know, give us some sort of concrete examples if you
can. It's a function of both enforcement, because those gaps are there. That's one. The other is, you know, we are going in for end-to-end digitalization of our tax authority. Because the moment you remove human intervention, and that will be over the next 12 to 18 months that we are able to do that, it will certainly help in our revenues. It will help the transparency and it'll bring better client experience. The only way it is going to happen here is if we digitalize the system and we take the human intervention out. So there's going to be short-term, medium-term, long-term steps which we are going to take. And the short-term stuff, which is enforcement, is already underway.
And in the short term as well, it's going to mean financial pain for quite a lot of Pakistanis too, surely.
Well, you know, we have run out of taxing the same for more. Can we do it for another year? Can we do it for another 2 years? Yes, we can. But if we don't start by bringing under-taxed and untaxed sectors into the fold, I keep on repeating myself, then we'll never get there. So our hand has been forced.
And
we have to move in that direction.
The other side of this is, of course, revenues and how you raise revenues, and particularly around exports, which is something I think for the entirety of my career at the World Service, successive Pakistani governments of all colours have said they're going to do more of. How do you break that cycle? How do you actually manage to make that a reality?
I would say if you see year on year, actually the revenues have gone up, and they have gone up quite significantly. The issue still remains that we have to bring off, you know, the fiscal discipline, which means more revenues. And we also have to manage our expenditures at the government level, which means greater fiscal discipline, which needs to be brought in. But I think here we are sort of mixing a few things. One is sort of the taxation part on the revenue side and on the expenditure side. So that's the fiscal side. You know, the question that is always asked, why do you think this is going to be the last program? You know, we are in the 24th program that we are entering. And the only way we are going to get out is by a clear road to market, which means we have to increase our exports. There has to be foreign direct investment, and we have to improve our ratings so that we can access international capital markets. So it'll be a combination of the three, which we have to execute over the next 2 to 3 years so that we don't have to seek another program.
Country drowning in government debt. And now you're saying to people, don't worry, we're going to put your taxes up too.
I would like to remind you of two things. The inflation peaked at 38%. Yes, it's now down to 20%. It's the state bank figure, because it's the central bank which is managing both the interest rate and the foreign exchange. And their monetary policy is saying that we will get to 5 to 7% by September of next year. So we are certainly on a downward trajectory. Now let's come to your second point, asking people to do more and asking for more taxes. Yes, in those sectors which have not contributed yet, because the salaried class is where they have been taxed, and more taxes on the same, similarly on the industry side. So in terms of the sectors which have not contributed so far, we have to start moving in that direction. That's very important.
Do you not worry that some of those people might just decide to go somewhere else, somewhere that's a lower tax jurisdiction, that you lose some of those people on the way that you need?
I think talent hunt and talent acquisition, talent retention is a global discussion. We will do our level best to ensure that we balance the two, including, as I mentioned, if we don't do what we need to do in bringing these untaxed sectors, then it's actually the salaried class which will walk with their feet if they are continuing to be taxed the way they are being taxed today. And as I said, that optionality is always there. We tax the same for more. But that's sort of kicking can down the road. And if we will continue to be hovering around 10% tax to GDP, and that, as I keep on saying, is not sustainable.
A final thought, Minister. What about the debt? At a very high level, the government debt still, and obviously getting more, we're talking about it a lot on the programme today, with the strength of the US dollar, for example, that a lot of that debt is in, becomes more expensive to finance it. High interest rate world, been very expensive to finance it. Must keep you up at night, doesn't it? It'll make you pretty nervous having to try and deal with those repayments as the finance minister.
I think as far as the external debt is concerned, our profile as a country is very different from many other countries. Our commercial debt has actually been paid, but we have paid about $6 to $8 billion. We repaid the euro bond, $1 billion, about 2 weeks back. The next payment is not due till $500 million till September of next year. The rest of our debt is bilaterals and multilaterals. So it's a very, very different profile of the debt.
But it's $130 billion. I mean, it's an extraordinary pile of debt.
No, but that's where I would correct you if you want to check your figures. It's now below 100 billion. The commercial part of it is only 6 to 7%. And the balance, 80%, 85% is really multilateral and bilateral stuff. A lot of bilateral stuff has been rolled over, and we expect the same for the next fiscal year. As far as the local debt is concerned, listen, we are, as a country, our debt to GDP is about 70%. Now, there are many other countries, they have gone beyond 100%. This level of debt has to be brought down. The debt servicing locally, as the interest rate regime starts coming down, will start relieving the pressure on the exchequer as the policy rate moves down over a period of time in line with inflation. And that will bring our debt servicing cost as well. So as far as we're concerned, at this point in time,
It is certainly a data point that we are keeping a very close eye on. This is not something which we worry too much about.
You raised it yourself, Minister, earlier, so I'll put your own point to you and a cliched point, as you pointed out. But what is your level of hope, belief, that this is the last round with the IMF, that this is the final programme, and that you crack this problem at the 20-odd time of answering?
That is the whole point. If we don't take the tough decisions, if we don't move forward with the structural reforms, we just talked about the tax aspect of it, but we need reforms on the energy side, we need reforms on the SOE side, and we need to accelerate the privatization agenda. On the privatization side, our national airline is being privatized as we speak. We are privatizing one of the larger airports at this point in time, and I'm very hopeful that by early July, we will see success at both. And then there are other loss-making SOEs which we need to privatize as we go forward. So these three areas are going to be critical, and the success around is going to be critical if we are not envisioning another program.
That was Pakistan's new finance minister, Mohammad Aurangzeb, speaking exclusively to my colleague Will Bain here on World Business Report. Let me bring in finally then Susan Schmidt back, head of public equity at the State of Wisconsin Investment Board. Susan, investors listening to that, are they going to be inspired, do you think, to perhaps invest? Emerging markets are always an interesting place to go, but with that kind of assurance, is Pakistan now investable?
Well, I think that's a large generalized statement, and it really depends what type of investor you are. When you listen to that, it's so complex, so confusing, and investors are really looking for the potential return that they can get on their investment relative to the amount of risks they have to take. Clearly, in that situation, because it does sound so confusing, it implies that there's a lot of risk. So investors are looking at that, and certainly from my perspective, I'm looking at individual businesses that I can invest in. And so when I'm looking at investing in a business, say in Pakistan, I want to understand what their profitability is, what are their markets, who are they selling to, what is the assurance that those sales and the profitability will continue? And that involves, of course, how the government will tax them and what actions that they will take. It makes for a very complicated calculation on that risk reward as an investor looking at that as a potential investment. And I think that's where, when you have a country that has to work towards dealing with the IMF, getting a loan, helping them to bail them out, it becomes more and more difficult to entice investors into their population.
It's
and
a
into
big,
their
big
businesses.
Challenge, isn't it? But we'll
sure.
see. We shall see. Anyway, thanks so much, Susan. And that's it from World Business Report from all of us here. Bye-bye.
The mountains are what keeps me motivated in life.
It's where we get to ask ourselves who we are and who we want to become.
At the turn of this century, 5 mountaineers set out on individual missions to become the first woman to scale all 14 of the world's 8,000ers. 14 mountains, all above 8,000 meters.
It was about pitting themselves against nature rather than each other.
They knew only one of them would succeed, but whether they liked it or not, it would come to be seen as a race.
5 women vying against each other.
The media needed to find some competition, and they find it.
A race with deadly consequences.
We are just not designed to live in these environments. Getting down alive was my only goal in that situation.
Amazing Sports Stories from the BBC World Service tells their story in Chasing Mountains.
Every step was an achievement.
Search for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.